Jake. Okay, we're good. Are we recording?
Yeah, we've been recording for the past like 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
So
we're going to title this podcast, How Jake and Alec Got Everything Wrong.
Yeah.
We'd only made one podcast prior to the election, and both of us actually predicted a Clinton victory.
A wide victory, too.
Yeah. Actually, Alec was a little more conservative than I was, but I actually predicted a large Clinton victory, and I cannot believe how wrong I was. In fact, it was really funny watching Alec because the first state to go red was Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of watch the results ticked in, and Clinton would be up by, you know, a fraction of a percent, and then Trump would be up by a fraction of a percent, and then as it, you know, solidified into a clear Trump victory, like, we knew the night was not going to go the way that we expected.
Yeah. I mean, it was very odd to be in the Crite office. We had basically every single news affiliate up on our computers and our TV, and everything was starting to set it. Like, we're doing the numbers and we were looking at it and we're going, something's not right here. And you can, the whole room, I mean, you got a room full of people who support journalism. So a Trump victory was not the most exciting precedent, but you could watch everyone in that room start to realize what was happening and the total mood of the night changed. And I have some play in that. I think I was completely surprised, and I mean, I broke out in hives.
Yeah, there's a really good picture of Alec on our Crite Politics Twitter page, of just his head in his hands. It's really funny because we, you know, Florida had gone, and that wasn't the end game for sure, but it wasn't anything anyone called because, you know, Romney, who's a moderate Republican, had lost Florida. It was a close race, but it was pretty sizable. Now we saw Trump out turnouting Romney. I mean, both candidates, Clinton and Trump, out turnout. They had a higher turnout than the previous 22 election. But it was crazy because it flipped and it was not expected. I mean, Florida was going to be a swing state. It generally is, but it just was the last thing a lot of us expected. But as Virginia there for a while started to go red, and as Pennsylvania showed in close and New Hampshire showed in close,
yeah.
I know, it was a little wild. So it was something none of us expected for sure. Alec and I had to leave our Crite Politics party for a second because we needed to go downstairs and consume alcoholic beverages.
Yeah.
And it was actually a good experience. We walked downstairs and there were some other students downstairs and their views were varying.
There's a couple African-American students, and it was interesting to be surrounded by people of all different kind of ethnicities in that moment when they were realizing where this election was going.
Yeah.
I didn't really see any Trump supporters. I mean, we made a Clinton supporter friend downstairs, which was interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting. And I talked to a couple third party guys downstairs, but this is a college campus, and even though we're in a pretty conservative county, there's not a lot of Trump supporters out here. I mean, I have spoken since the election. Now that he's won, I think it's a little more in vogue to talk about your support of him.
Yeah.
And especially because I think, you know, college kids are generally more liberal. Those who did vote for Trump didn't know they were going to do it till a couple hours before they voted.
Yeah, and I think we saw a lot of that. And I think, you know, that's one of the reasons why the polling got it so wrong, is because a lot of people weren't open about who they were actually going to vote for. And that's just something that you can't account for in polling data. You have to, that's what the whole point of a poll is that you're supposed to trust that the person on the other side of the phone is giving you an accurate portrayal of what they're supporting in that moment. And that's where a lot of the polls went wrong.
Right. And as a journalist, like, I don't like blaming the media. I mean, I there are obviously things the media did this season that weren't great. But I think one of their big failures actually was discounting Trump's claim that people don't admit support for Donald Trump to pollsters. There's a social stigma against pretending you're for Trump. And, you know, it's obviously hindsight is 2020, but the more we're looking at this post election, it makes more sense. So, man, I mean, but again, in the Crite office, we had a single Trump supporter.
Mm-hmm.
We had a Gary Johnson voter. We had plenty of Clinton voters.
Well, I think even in that room, we probably still had some Trump supporters as well who just didn't want to, you know, voice that feeling that they had. And that's just what we have as a country right now is.
Yeah. And to some extent, that's a failure of those of us who don't support Trump, is that we're a little bit too dismissive of Trump support because we don't understand how they could come to that conclusion mm-hmm. while receiving the same information that we do.
And I think that political divide is going to get even deeper as we go along because, I mean, you know, there's been calls for, unity after this election. But I think this is one of the first elections where our ideological differences between the two candidates and the two parties at this moment is so stark that I don't know if there's actually too much room for coming together on a lot of yeah. ideas.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking for the silver lining in this.
Yes.
But I hope that the next election cycle that comes around, those of us who disagree with one side don't try and stifle support and don't try to stifle open dialogue about a candidate, because maybe that's one of the things that helped Trump so much was that his supporters just backed off.
Mm-hmm.
They backed off mainstream reporting. They backed off mainstream discussions of politics, and they retreated to areas where they were safe and secure and nothing challenged them. And that could be one of the reasons that all this investigative journalism into Donald Trump's past and his business dealings and his treatment of women has gone so ignored.
Yeah. And I think my biggest concern, you know, and I do want to be optimistic, but I think it's our job to create that kind of freedom of speech that we've been lacking lately. But I'm concerned about, you know, the things that Donald Trump has said concerning libel laws and journalists in general, of that maybe under that administration, there won't be as much free speech available. So I think that's really the job of the young people and the journalists to make sure that there is an equal distribution of information on candidates everywhere. And I think, and I'm not saying that we should be more critical of Trump. I think we should be more critical of every single person who could possibly hold public office.
Right. Right. And part of that is expanding the message to people who aren't primed to receive it. You know, for a large part, there are certain news broadcasts, and news syndicates that, definitely cater to certain demographics of people. And I think that's on both sides, not necessarily just one, but it might be worthwhile to come together with a more centrist media message. And I'm not saying, you know, unbiased is a hard standard to hit. Perhaps there's room for maybe, you know, MSNBC has a high concentration of liberal reporters. Fox mm-hmm. News has a high concentration of conservative reporters. Maybe the move in journalism is to now start building, you know, diverse ideological groups of reporters working for news syndicates so that bias washes out.
Right.
I don't know what the solution is.
I really hope that there's a push against cable news. That's my honest opinion. I think that once you have news that is filmed, you have commentators, you have people that are visually there, I think that opens up a lot of opportunity for lack of both sides. And I think, man, I really hope that there's a push for print publications, not print in the terms of, I know that, you know, print on paper is dying, and that, I mean, that's going to happen someday, but we're all going to have to start reading again.
Yeah.
We're going to have to get better about that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be something. I mean, and read everything. Like you can't turn away articles or books that, you know, your friends share or that come across your radar because you think their message is crazy and you know you're not going to disagree. Like you have to expose yourself to controversial ideas.
And read more than the headline as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely. Speaking of media, it's interesting. Trump TV came out the night of what, the third debate?
Uh-huh.
And it's like a new Breitbart Daily Wire kind of thing. It's an internet streaming like podcast-ish streaming service, but it's slogan is actually hair and unbalanced. That's actually, you know, Trump has endorsed that slogan.
That's actually kind of funny.
Yeah, but it's interesting to me for a couple of reasons, because at the time when I saw it came out, I thought, you know, Trump is preparing for his win. He's facing just a landslide loss in the polls, and so what he's doing is he's trying to come up with an avenue to get his views across to his supporters and keep this movement going. But now that he's president, I don't know what his strategy is going to be with that. Is he going to be the only president in history with his own media channel?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, we're doing this podcast right now, as a lot of people are doing podcasts, doing TV, doing, you know, message boards, just talking about how they don't know what's going to happen next. And it's basically, we're just all asking questions. I think we have had a Clinton policy idea of what was going to happen in the next 4 years. With President Trump, we have no real idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe this is a good time to get to this. What is, what's the policy you're most worried about under a President Trump?
I think, I don't know if I have an exactly one. I think the thing that I'm most concerned about is a culmination of all those policies and a climate that allows for more anger. And we're going to see a lot more. I think we're honestly going to see more protests. I think people are going to get more and more upset as policies are enacted. And I think that, I mean, here's the thing. We have a Black Lives Matter movement that's going on during the administration of a Black president. Now, I have no idea, and I'm kind of terrified about what could happen with those sorts of movements under a Trump presidency. I think that's the thing I'm most concerned about.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. For me, the thing I'm most concerned about is Trump has talked a lot about, changing the NATO agreement.
Mm-hmm.
For those listeners who don't know, NATO is the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. It's a group of, Western democratized countries for the most part that have banded together against. It was a Cold War creation, essentially meant to offset the power of Russia. Part of the treaty agreement is that if you're Turkey and you're attacked, the United States is contractually obligated to come to Turkey's aid.
Right.
Trump has suggested that he would not go to certain countries' aid based on the situation. He's also suggested that he needs to renegotiate the agreement. And there's a fair amount of legitimacy there. I mean, there's requirements such as, you know, every country in NATO has to keep up 2% of its gross domestic product as... Or excuse me, not gross domestic product, 2% of its national budget as defense. And
a lot of them aren't doing that right now.
A lot of them aren't doing that. And so that's fairly legitimate. But dismantling NATO, you know, making negotiations that really threaten the cohesiveness and the strength of that alliance is going to shift the international balance of power.
Sure.
That's probably not an issue that matters to a lot of voters this election cycle. But, you know, as a student of international relations, that's kind of important to me.
I think that's just an issue that we're experiencing is, we've been talking in broad terms. We've been kind of talking in cartoony terms of, you know, he's got his finger on the button. What could happen? I don't think we've recognized how much this could really affect the world and those people that we've been providing assistance to during this kind of new Cold War that we're interacting with. And maybe that we're in a brave new world of what that Cold War could look like now that relations with Russia could be improving in the way that, you know, President Trump and President Putin see. I agree with that. I think that's a very terrifying, but
it's a little scary.
Yeah.
It would be less scary if Putin hadn't 2 years ago annexed part of the Ukraine.
Right.
And consistently exemplified
those.
Right. And I don't want to dig on to Obama too much, but at the beginning of his presidency, he laughed at Republicans like Romney, who said that Russia was going to be one of the greatest threats of the next decade. And he mm-hmm. laughed and he said, you know, this isn't the Cold War. This was in the debate in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was no way he could have predicted that for sure. But it's definitely becoming a forefront as far as international relations go. So That's for me what I'm worried about most. What so and because we're gonna try and be fair to President-elect Trump.
Of course.
What's the policy you think Trump will enact that makes you most optimistic?
So okay, I've been actually thinking about this today. Now you are a more seasoned political science student than I am. So this thing that he's been talking about, I see it as a positive in my kind of vague mind of enacting term limits on Congress. I see that as something that could be very positive in a system that's been gridlocked for the past couple of years. So I think that that prospect is kind of exciting. I don't know if he's going to do that now that he's got a full red House and red Senate. But I think that, I mean, even in a vague way, you can see why people voted for Trump. It's complete change. It's it's going to be the starkest change we've seen for I can't even compare it to anything because this is unprecedented. So I think you can look at it in a exciting and a scary way and exciting in a great way because you have no idea what could happen. You have no idea how much the establishment is going to change in the next 4 years.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, is going to be really interesting to watch. And I think that's actually pretty fair. I mean, term limits have been a conservative, a conservative policy that everyone, you know, espouses. Some of us in Colorado saw on a ballot that there were certain candidates running for Senate and House of Representatives who had signed pledges not to run for more than a term, not to run for more than two terms. And definitely in that like Jeffersonian idea of democracy was the idea that a common man represents his people and goes back to the career prior.
We haven't seen that much.
Yeah, we definitely haven't. I don't know enough about that policy to know what the long-term effects are. But for those of us who think the system is rigged against us, there's nothing wrong, I think, with suggesting that maybe the incumbency advantage be stymied.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as the decision that I'm most excited about for President Trump, I guess maybe I have the most positive attitude towards, maybe not necessarily excited. I'm a big constitutional law geek.
Mm-hmm.
I generally fall on the conservative side of the spectrum. One of the big things that really bothered me about voting for Clinton and one of the reasons I didn't end up voting for her and instead voted third party was because the Supreme Court is likely to radically change. I mean, Scalia is an absence that has not yet been filled. And like we said last podcast, there are three justices right now approaching, you know, upper 80s.
Right.
And if Obama had been a third term president or Hillary had been in office, you know, those justices would have inevitably gone liberal. And for me, that's not necessarily a policy that I agree with. That being said, I'm not sure how conservative Trump's justices are going to be, and I don't know how traditionally conservative they're going to be. They could be this new quasi-conservative that's, you know, anti-free trade, anti, you know, First Amendment, anti-journalist. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's enough justice candidates out there
right
for him to find like that, but it's definitely something I'm excited to watch and definitely something that I think is a positive that I can take away from this win.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is really a unprecedented territory we're heading into where he has thrown out all the establishmental ideas of what it takes to be a president, what's presidential, what it, you know, the rules that you're supposed to follow, they're all out the window. So I think, I mean, you know, we can talk about, I think one of the biggest things that happened today is Trump went to the Capitol and then also went to the White House and met with President Obama. And he seemed very contained in that conversation. They seemed very cordial and President-elect Trump seemed presidential. So I think that's something to look towards as perhaps this could be the continuation of or the beginning of a new type of Trump where he's actually in the office, or it could just be kind of the reassurance right now while the storms are turbulent, and then we'll go back to what is actually his agenda.
Yeah, I mean, I think Trump is a unique case. I think that he's completely and totally off the rails. I mean, he's, for example, our first president who has not been in the military or public service prior to being elected to office.
Yes.
He's one of the first presidents we've really had to worry about conflict of interest between business and presidential. I mean, Romney was a business person, but we never really worried that he wasn't going to drop his business for his presidency.
Yeah.
But I guess it's not the first time that a president has been elected that people scoffed at for not being an establishment figure. I mean, Reagan notably, and Trump is no Reagan, don't get me wrong.
Uh-huh.
But so Reagan was an actor prior to, and granted he had the governorship of California, but he was a divorced ex-liberal Hollywood actor who became, you know, one of the most solid conservative figures in our country.
And, sure.
So maybe it's worth, I mean, we really have no choice, but maybe it's worth letting Trump have a couple days in office before we start condemning him.
No, and you know, I think that's completely fair, and I think that's actually very healthy in this time right now. I think that there should be some optimism. I think there should be some very careful optimism. But I think that we really need to offer this time for him to show that he will be a president for all Americans, like he said mm-hmm. in his acceptance speech. But I think that once he does something that the American people, the majority of the American people do not feel comfortable with, I think that's a time that we're going to see some major voicing.
And I certainly don't want to suggest that now that Trump is president, we all need to roll over and just let him run his course.
Definitely.
But maybe we do need to evaluate his decision-making on the merits of his decision-making and not on the wildness of his campaign. Maybe give him a little leeway. I mean, I don't plan to go easy on him as far as journalistic coverage does. Yeah. I didn't plan to go easy on Clinton either when I thought she was going to win. But mm-hmm. I'm ready to see what he's going to do.
Yeah, and we both have his Twitter page open right now. And it's really curious because he is going, I don't expect him to really censor himself too much on Twitter. That's my guess. I don't see that being something that he's going to let go of. That's definitely one of his favorite things. And he's been getting some critiques for this recent tweet that he had, which is just had a very open and successful presidential election. And now professional protesters incited by the media are protesting. Very unfair.
Now, I mean, I haven't read every single story, so mm-hmm. so maybe I'm missing something, but I have not seen any evidence to support the idea that the protesters in the last couple of nights have been paid.
Right. I think that, and here's the thing, I don't think that, I'm not arguing that this wouldn't have happened under Clinton, if Clinton had won. I believe that this very thing would have happened, and I think we all would have, I think Trump supporters would have been telling protesters to shut up. The other way around. I think Clinton supporters would be telling Trump protesters to shut up, just like what's happening right now. I think that this is just going to be a natural reaction because the country is very divided in what they believe is who should be the president. And I think this is just going to be a little wavering time right now where we're all a little shell-shocked.
Yeah. You know, speaking of shell-shock, what was the environment on campus the last couple of days for you?
I just spoke with Dana Nunn from the CMU administration, who was talking about how the whole campus just felt weird the day after. It felt different. And I felt different. So I don't know if I can accurately depict on what, you know, campus actually felt like, but I think that it definitely wasn't, it was very odd. I don't know what you saw.
I mean, so We made it about 5 minutes through the lecture in my first class when my professor kind of stopped and went, you know, I can tell you guys aren't ready to pay attention to, you know, what we'd been studying prior to. Let's talk about the election. And we weren't partisan about it. I think especially after the story that you broke earlier this year, professors have been a little on edge as far as
I've been noticing that too.
I'm speaking out about candidates. Yeah. They've been definitely wary about it.
Yeah.
But we did definitely talk about, you know, the failures of political science. because there was no way we could have predicted this. I mean, Alec and I had poured over data before our first podcast.
Yeah.
We weren't just saying we think Clinton's going to win because we want Clinton to win.
No, yeah.
All indicators showed Clinton having a greater chance of winning than Donald Trump. I mean, the morning of, the New York Times had given Hillary Clinton like a 90-something percent chance of winning. After Florida flipped, it just completely...
It kept sliding the other way.
Yeah. Yeah, and... I mean, I walked around. There was a guy, one of my friends. He'd post on Facebook he was going to walk around campus with a piece of tape over his mouth, and so he showed up to class with a piece of tape on it over his mouth. And
for why?
So the idea was, it actually wasn't really a protest against his winning. It was more of a reflection. It was, you know, he is a self-professed progressive liberal.
Uh-huh.
And he said, you know, as a progressive liberal, I thought my policies were correct. I thought the majority of Americans supported my policies, and apparently I was wrong. And that means that I didn't listen well enough.
Right.
And he goes, so the Facebook post, I mean, he obviously couldn't say anything because he had duct tape over his mouth. But the Facebook post basically said, you know, I'm going to put tape over my mouth so I hear my fellow Americans more than I hear myself.
Wow. That's pretty profound.
It was pretty profound. Yeah. And I think it was one of the you know, the most diplomatic ways of mentioning, hey, this is a monumental event for some of us,
mm-hmm.
but also we have to realize that the nation made a different choice than us, and we have to reconcile with the fact that maybe we didn't have the monopoly on ideas.
Right. And I mean, I'm not a, clearly the polls are wrong. Political science has some work to do, in adapting to a Trump America and what a Trump America means to, you know, analyzing politics. We haven't really talked about why this happened, why Trump is now the president. All the polls have been showing that that Clinton was going to win. There was confidence there. But, you know, it turned out to not happen. I've been noticing that people have saying, you know, Black voters failed to help the country and get Clinton elected. I've also heard that when you compare Black voters to the 2012 and 2008 election of Barack Obama, that was the first Black president who had ever gotten a major nomination. So to say that that kind of number would go back towards a white woman is not being very generous to Black people.
Yeah. And I haven't pored over the demographic numbers as much. I mean, I paid attention to education levels.
Mm-hmm.
Trump actually won whites without a college degree. He won whites above the age of 45. He did very well with white women, surprisingly.
Yes.
Which no political scientist had predicted the day prior. But I don't want to go with the cop out political science answer, but I really think globalization had something to do with this. I mean, we saw it with Brexit to a certain extent.
Go ahead and define globalization.
Globalization is the idea that the world is becoming a more global place. Like, our communications are faster, our trade is faster, our relationships with other countries are faster. So free trade, for example, which means there's an economic concept called comparative advantage, which basically says, you know, you produce what you're most efficient at producing, and you trade with countries that are most efficient at producing something else, and together you guys produce more than you could on your own.
Sure.
And so there's that that premise driving free trade. You know, so China makes our components and some of our personal goods, and we pay them cheaper labor. We get lower cost of goods. And I think what's happening, and Trump has talked about this isn't, you know, new news. You know, Trump has talked about how manufacturers in America are losing their jobs.
Yeah.
And so I think there was a big, I mean, you saw the Rust Belt went Trump. I mean, Minnesota, which has traditionally been a blue state, Michigan, which has traditionally been a blue state, but those are manufacturing hubs.
Mm-hmm. Minnesota still stayed blue, but it got real close.
I mean, Wisconsin.
Yeah. And Pennsylvania too, man. Like,
yeah, Pennsylvania. Yeah. I mean, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Both went blue, but every other county in Pennsylvania was red.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers are their mascot is the steel mill worker. You know, Pennsylvania is a huge steel mill state.
Right.
And I guess perhaps political science pollsters underestimated that level of turnout from people who feel as though the expanded globalization is taking their jobs, taking their livelihood, and that they are not adequately equipped to, you know, move on into new industries.
Well, you know, as much as there's differences between Obama and Trump, they both promised change. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that really resonates with people. And I think that they saw Trump have something that would completely radicalize how American government would work. And I think that a lot of voters do not support, you know, the things that he's talked about, you know, the racist and the sexist and the sexual assault stuff. I think that they overlook that because they feel that, you know, there's an equal evil with Clinton. And they also saw that Trump is promising that things were to change for them. And I think people have just been growing more and more frustrated with the establishment, and they just wanted someone who would just flip it upside down.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, America's got one of the oldest constitutions in the world. I don't want to say it's the oldest. I feel like it's the oldest, but I'm not sure if it is. I mean, the Magna Carta is certainly earlier. So, but you know, as a document of government, the Constitution's ridiculously old. It's 200 something years old. Jeez, mm-hmm. I can't do math right now. But it's an old document, and in ways it wasn't designed for modern life. As I say that, I'm not suggesting that the Constitution be done away with or
no.
A new system. As someone who leans conservative, I absolutely adhere to, you know, constitutional. I mean, so what's funny about this is that conservatives, their namesake comes from, you know, a movement called conservatism started by Edmund Burke.
Mm-hmm.
If you read Edmund Burke, his book just basically makes fun of the French Revolution. It basically, he's like, you guys are silly. You guys are breaking the system. You're not, this is too fast of change. It's not slow. It's not incremental. You're just, I mean, cars weren't invented at the time, but his metaphor is essentially you have a broken car and you just set it on fire.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting that a conservative, you know, Trump calls himself a conservative, is kickstarting this movement,
right,
that is more like the French Revolution than the incremental change you saw Romney and McCain suggesting.
Well, I think we got to recognize that Trump is not a traditional conservative. I would not describe him as a conservative.
I wouldn't either.
I think that, I mean, he was a Democrat when we first started recognizing him as a celebrity on the world stage. So
Hillary had to concede to a former donor. Yeah. I find that hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. Was he at her wedding or was she at, I think she was at his wedding.
Someone's at somebody's wedding.
Yeah. So, I mean, they weren't strangers. But yeah, I would not categorize him as a conservative. And I think he's a showman, and
he's an opportunist. Yeah.
Yeah. He did a very good job at showing, the American people that I got a better product than this lady over here. So let's get moving, people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess maybe this is something what's your prediction on how a Republican controlled House and Senate is going to react to Donald Trump? Because like you say, he's not a traditional conservative. Mm-hmm. He doesn't stand for free trade. He doesn't stand for, you know, protection of freedom of speech. There's a lot of values he holds dear that I do not believe fit with the conservatism that, you know, Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell have put forth. Do you think Republicans will fight him on some of his more radical policies?
No, yeah, of course. I think that some policies you're going to see, you know, I think it really depends on how Trump handles himself. If Trump starts making a fool of himself right out the gate, I think you're going to see a weary House and Senate who are not going to follow him blindly because they recognize that history will not look upon them kindly. But I believe as well that they see this as an opportunity to get some stuff that they feel is right done. So I think that we're going to see a lot of policies change real fast. But I think it also really depends on the policy because I think we're going to see a lot of, I think, filibuster, prepare for that word to be on your news headlines for the next 4 years. The Democrats in the House and the Senate are going to try to filibuster as much as they possibly can.
Yeah. What's really funny is yesterday, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan said that Obamacare repeal is one of the policies they would like to see enacted in the first 100 days. And so in political science, like the first 100 days of a presidency are impressive. You're fresh off an election, public opinion. I mean, even if you've lost an election by a fraction of a percent, public opinion is in your favor. People are ready to see what you do, and you have a lot of public support. Mm-hmm. And so in this first 100 days, we might see Obamacare get repealed. And reports show that, you know, Trump's looking to Ben Carson to try and find an alternative for Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know what Ben Carson is like on healthcare policy. I haven't listened to him on that, but he was really bad on foreign policy, and so I hope that trend doesn't continue.
He is a doctor. What is he a doctor in? Is he an actual doctor?
Yeah, he's a neurosurgeon.
Oh.
He actually separated the first set of conjoined twins.
I remember hearing about that early in the election.
Yeah, he's objectively a really smart guy. I don't know how well that transitions over to politics.
Right. Is it going to be called Carson Care?
Oh, boy. That's too many C's.
Yeah. You know, concerning public opinion in those first 100 days, are we going to see a historic low in support? When you know,
ooh,
they start asking, you know, do you support the president? Do you think those approval ratings are going to just drop hard? Because I think objectively, I would argue that the majority of Americans do not support a Trump presidency.
Yeah, and, I mean, he did lose the popular vote.
Right. And I think that, you know, if you had every American turn out to vote, I mean, this is my opinion, but I believe that the majority of Americans do not support Donald Trump. So I think that we're going to see for the first time a president who comes out from an election at the lowest it could possibly go.
You know, I don't think that's necessarily wrong, but it's also worth noting that the 2000 election was very similar. And obviously Bush wasn't quite as controversial as Trump was. But he did lose the election as far as the popular vote goes. Mm-hmm. As far as the Electoral College goes, he did win. And the Supreme Court confirmed that. But unlike this election, a lot of Americans feel like this has been stolen from them. I mean, I think the hard part this year is that not only was the election not stolen, it was won. And the popular vote, obviously, he lost. But the Electoral College, he won pretty handily. It wasn't a close race.
You know, and I would argue that people don't even feel like it's stolen. I feel like they weren't offered anything.
Yeah, they weren't asked, maybe.
Yeah, I think that they were like, wait, this election's happening. Who do we have? I don't support either of that. I'm just not going to participate. And I think that that's why, you know, we have less of a Gore or Bush situation where someone feels that they're, you know, the election was stolen. I'm sure there's a lot of Clinton supporters, like diehard Clinton supporters out there who feel that the election was stolen from them. But there's a lot of people who jumped on the Clinton bandwagon from, you know, the Bernie Sanders and, you know, those more left supporters, and also those moderate Republicans who looked at Donald Trump and said no.
Yeah. And there was a fair amount of moderate Republican elites who were vocal about their support for Clinton. Mm-hmm. I mean, Colin Powell voting for Clinton. You know, I don't know how excited he was about it, but there were definitely a couple House representatives. I don't have their names at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to a whole bunch of staffers in D.C. who will remain unnamed, who worked for Republicans. And interns as well, interns who worked for Republicans and were going to vote for Clinton because they wanted stability. But yeah, it's going to be this. I think the thing we did call right, I know we're going to title this podcast, you know, how Jake and Alec got everything wrong.
Right.
I think the thing we did get right on the last podcast is that this is going to be the election that defines our generation.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, we talked about this on election night. Both of us were sitting on the floor in the Crite office after everyone had left, just kind of trying to understand what had happened that night. And we were talking about how this is going to be a really defining time in our country. And I honestly feel, as you know, and I've been wrong before, but I believe that this could be something where we have never seen a youth opposition to their president on this scale since Nixon. I think we're going to see that for the next 4 years. I think that's what we're going to see.
You know, let me look up really quick what the youth map for this election would have looked like, because
she would have won substantially.
Yeah. I think Wyoming, hold on, it's loading. It looks like Wyoming, Idaho, North Dakota, Kentucky, West Virginia, only five states that did not win the youth vote.
And 500 electoral college votes for 504 for Clinton.
Yeah, 504 to 23. Yeah. What's interesting about that is, you know, I've seen a lot of tweets from young people going, thanks, older generation, for letting us clean your mess up. And
that's the same argument that's happening over in the UK after
exactly
Brexit.
Yeah, Brexit was and the harsh reality of that is, especially with, you know, with Brexit, is that a lot of those people won't be around in 30 years when the consequences of Brexit are really starting to hit home.
Sure.
And I'm not sure a Trump presidency is going to be as monumental in effect as Brexit. I could be proven wrong.
Yeah, it really depends on how much he wants to get done.
Yeah, yeah. But there is, it seems globally, a movement among, or a divide among old and young voters that is going to disproportionately affect young voters. In fact, Politico put out an article about, you know, there's a Democratic convention, or not convention, Democratic committee meeting where the chairman stood up and a Clinton staffer stood up and said, look, I mean, your generation needs to step down. He basically told the chairman, you're too old to be in this position because you're going to die before climate change kills me.
Right.
Yeah. And that was a quote. I'm not paraphrasing that. That was a quote by Politico. And yeah, that's a sentiment that I think is going to be pretty powerful in the next, if not at midterms in 4 years. And we might actually see youth turnout start to matter.
Yeah, and I want to wrap this up, but I think that, you know, there's going to be, I don't know if we as humans will ever answer this question, but when are we going to realize that we can't keep ignoring the youth, because they're usually correct about where the country is going. And we've been seeing that time and time again about where the country needs to go is you look to the youth, and yet we're still ignoring that voice.
Yeah, and this is funny because we're youth, so obviously listen to us.
Sure. Yeah, we know everything.
Yeah, we do. We have much more college than, wait, no, we don't.
No.
yeah, but it is important to know that there are going to be policies that affect youth disproportionately. For example, education. Obviously, we're trying to make dig at our footholds in the world, and the cost of education is going to go up. And Trump has not spoken much on how or if he's going to solve that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, climate change is going to disproportionately affect us because more of us and our children are going to be alive than those of us who voted for Trump in this election.
And according to Trump, it's a Chinese conspiracy. So look forward to that.
Yeah, yeah.
So to end this, unless you had any more.
No, I think we're good.
I was thinking that we could kind of, since we cannot really accurately predict what's happening, what would you say for our listeners to watch for in the coming week?
Oh, boy. You know, even if you don't like Donald Trump, you should follow his Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
He's had some really fun tweets in the past, and by, I say that very sarcastically. There was a 9/11 that he tweeted best wishes to everyone, including the haters and losers.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it will be interesting to see what kind of Twitter presence this president has. I mean, Obama, I think, revolutionized social media, in campaigning. I think he did a very good job with that. But Trump is the first one who honestly allows his unfiltered feelings to come out. And I honestly, and this is just for more amusement.
Yeah.
But honestly, go follow him. See, you know, and if nothing else, you get to quote the tweet of the president of the United States. That's kind of an interesting feature of technology. But
yeah. What I would say to watch for is, you know, we never got to touch on this, but, the protests that have been happening lately.
Oh yeah.
Watch those, with a grain of salt. I am a left-leaning liberal. I believe that there is room for critique of our new president. And I think there's also, we are entering a world where we need to have a more keen eye about what we read and what we watch. People have been saying that there is a student, I can't remember from which university, but said that it was a Muslim student who said that Trump supporters came out of a van and beat him and took his wallet. And the police, police said that that didn't happen. He lied about it. So people were taking this opportunity to abuse their power of getting, you know, the truth out there, and they are lying. And I think that I would call on all people who do not support Donald Trump to not do this, because you're only hurting this cause.
Yeah, you're only hurting your movement. And continuing, I don't know to what extent, the reports are hazy and I don't know what to trust, but it does seem that there are some reports that these protests on college campuses are causing property damage. And that's the kind of stuff that doesn't look well on a supposed peaceful protest. So and I don't imagine that we're going to have any protests in Mesa County as red as it voted.
Not at this time. Not now.
No.
Yeah.
No. But with that being said, it's been fun, guys. We'll be back.
Yeah.
Soonish. Feel free to tweet us at Criterion Politics. What's our handle? At Criterion Politics?
I think so. Or I think it's Crite Politics.
Could be Crite Politics.
It might be one of those. Who knows? But follow
one
Donald Trump.
Yeah, follow them. Follow at Jake Carman at Twitter and at the Alec W also on Twitter. We'll see you guys later. Have fun.